Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. That's the name of this program. Today's Issues here on AFR. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Dr. Ray Pritchard joins us from Dallas as the second member of our panel. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well. Back from Florida, are you?
Yeah, back from Florida, here for a week, then up to New York. And by the way, Tim, do you know what today is?
Yeah, it's the day before Valentine's Day.
That's point one. Point one, right? Let all the men note duly, this is the day before Valentine's Day. This is also Fat Tuesday.
Fat Tuesday, which what, we can eat anything we want today?
That's right, because Lent starts tomorrow, Ash Wednesday. And I didn't know this, but Mardi Gras actually means Fat Tuesday. So, you know, if you want to put some extra ice cream plus sugar on your cake, this is the day to do it.
I want to get back to that in just a moment, but Fred Jackson joins us, Fred's news director for American Family Radio. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Fred.
Yeah, if I was on a Fat Tuesday diet, I probably would enjoy it Wednesday and Thursday, too.
Yeah, now, why stop today?
Now, the you're talking about the celebration of Mardi Gras,
means? That's right.
Okay, now, this is, I've always taken it as it's a big party. In New
totally,
Orleans and
totally
in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast, right?
That totally
by otherwise dedicated Christians. Is that true?
Yeah, it's totally true. It's
okay,
totally true.
They're just trying. What you try to do is you're squeezing all your sin in before you got to stop. Is that the idea?
Yes.
That's not. am I basically getting it here?
You're basically getting it.
Okay.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
So anyway, but so today's Fat Tuesday, tomorrow's Ash Wednesday.
That's
and
right.
And then on the Christian calendar, Lent begins.
That's exactly right. Leading the 40 days, not counting the weekends, but the 40 days that lead up to Good Friday and Easter Sunday.
Now, Easter is April 1 this year.
That's right.
Is Easter sometimes in March?
It can be as early as, I think, March the 20th or the 21st, and maybe as late sometimes as April the 25th.
Has to do with what?
Oh, man.
Doesn't it have to do with some...
Yes, the solar system, the sun and the moon, right?
The pagan gods, I think, decide when Easter is.
It's very arcane, astronomical, calculate. Fred, I'm sure you can explain
it. Explain it to us, Fred.
Oh, yeah, just throw it to me.
I know there are people listening to radio who are telling us right now through the radio exactly why Easter. Brent Creeley, you're our producer. You're a smart man. You can research this. Find out why what determines when Easter is. It does have something to do with the solstice.
Right.
Or something.
That's right, in the full moon and all of that.
That's why it changes. But we're gonna get the correct answer on this. It'd be a great trivia Friday question, but it's Tuesday and we need to know the answer so we can look smart.
That's right.
Or as Ed Vitaglia would say, smarter. all right. Anyway, welcome back from Florida. Why are you going to New York in February?
It's really bad scheduling. I'm up there. I'm up in the Adirondacks where they have a couple of feet of snow, teaching Galatians at Word of Life Bible Institute. It's easier to go to Florida in February than it is to go to New York.
I was going to say, Ray is paying his penance.
That's right.
Last week he was in Florida, and now he's got to go to New York.
So. That's right.
Yeah, I think it's the motivation is not quite the same as Florida and New York in February. What you're saying.
That's exactly. Last week it was like 70 degrees most days down there. It's going to be way
Clearwater, St. Pete, where were you?
That's exactly right. Just a little bit north of Tampa.
All right. Well, Fred Jackson, what's going on this morning, my friend?
Well, I got a story about Susan Rice, former ex-national security advisor. All right. I got to get a little background first. Our audience, we've been keeping them abreast of the various memos that have been coming out now Over the last several months, I think our audience have become familiar with FBI agents Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, boyfriend, girlfriend, and the fact that they hated Donald Trump. All right? Peter Strzok is the FBI agent that basically kind of wrote the memo for then FBI Director James Comey way back, even before Hillary Clinton was interviewed, basically exonerating her. Peter Strzok is the guy who interviewed Hillary Clinton, and of course, eventually they decided she didn't do anything wrong with her email. But also from their memos, their to-ing and fro-ing text messages back and forth, we also learned that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page hated Donald Trump. And in one of those messages, you may remember, they had a friend who happened to be the Deputy FBI Director, Andrew McCabe, who was fired just a few weeks ago. But remember one of the memos they talked about, basically, if Trump won, there was a plan B. And they referred in their memos to Andrew McCabe. All right.
But they called it something besides Plan B.
It was an insurance policy.
Insurance policy.
That's a quote.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Quotation insurance policy.
All right. So,
in other words, in case Donald Trump wins, we have to have something in place to cut him off at the knees.
That's it. And so we were left to speculate, although I think we came up with the idea, okay, we believe what happened was that the Obama administration in its final days came up with this whole Russian collusion thing, and that perhaps the Trump campaign was talking with Vladimir Putin on how to defeat Hillary Clinton, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
That's what we speculated on.
Yes.
All right. Fast forward to news that came out yesterday. And Susan Rice, ex-National Security Advisor, January 20th, 2017, Inauguration Day. She's in her final hours there at her White House office. What we learned yesterday is she wrote herself an email. She wrote herself an email. And in that email, she wrote this, quote, President Obama began the conversation. She's referring to a meeting on January the 5th. All right, so 15 days before. Referring to a meeting on the 5th of January in the Oval Office, attended by President Barack Obama, FBI Director James Comey, Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, and Vice President Joe Biden and Susan Rice. All right? So she writes this memo just a few hours before she leaves her office. In the memo, she says, President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. President stressed that he is not asking about initiating or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. But then, listen to this. Rice wrote that Obama said, quote, he wants to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, the Trump team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. Then she adds, the president asked Comey, sitting in the room, to inform him, Obama, if anything changes in the next few weeks, that should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. So here's the picture that we're getting in all of this. Number one, President Barack Obama was deeply involved in the so-called investigation of Russian collusion and perhaps incorporating the fact, or the story at least, that President candidate Trump was somehow working with the Russians. Also, you have to believe because the president, Obama, at the time was up on all of this and that Comey was in the room, that he had to be aware now of that dossier that we have been talking about, which was paid for by the Clinton campaign, but then used by the FBI, who was then run by James Comey, to go to the FISA court to get warrants to spy on members of the Trump team. So this just adds, and I believe adds another element to solidify what was going on in the background and what has been happening with regards to all of this alleged investigation into Russian collusion. But also, there's another part B to all of this. Byron York, Washington Examiner yesterday, he comes up with a story, he writes a story, that in March of 2017, James Comey briefed a number of Capitol Hill lawmakers on the Trump-Russia investigation. Coming out of this story from Byron York yesterday, we learned that 4 days after the president was sworn in as the president of the United States, that Comey and team interview Michael Flynn.
General
Michael Flynn. They come away from that meeting saying that Flynn didn't lie about anything. Basically, it was Yates that sent two FBI agents over to the White House to interview
to his house, I think.
Michael Flynn.
The Oval Office. Or West Wing.
West Wing of the White House. But they come away from that meeting saying he told the truth about everything.
Well, let me just interject here. According to Sandy Rios this morning, these two FBI agents who went to the White House to interview Michael Flynn 4 days after, because he was going to be the...
He was the National Security Advisor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is Susan Rice's old position.
Right.
Very high-level position, cabinet position, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, so serving President Trump. So, but these two FBI agents supposedly went to interview... they were interrogating the general.
Yes.
They weren't there to share information with him or to there in any other capacity. And according to Sandy Rios this morning, these two guys, I don't know if they were guys or not, the FBI just didn't inform him that.
They randomly showed up in the West Wing, started asking
questions.
He didn't have a lawyer present. Yes. And that's why he's caught in this trap.
But they came away saying that he didn't lie about anything, but then several months later, he's charged with lying to the FBI.
Right.
Fritz, so let me ask you about this memo that she wrote. Is there any plausible explanation other than for writing a memo to yourself on the very last day, right, the day of the inauguration, is there any plausible explanation for doing this other than to provide cover against the possibility of future investigations?
Well, what a lot of people are saying is her phraseology used, that everything is being done
she did it by twice.
The book.
She said that twice, didn't she?
Yes.
By the book?
By the book.
It sounds like she's testifying before a committee when she's actually writing an email to herself. This email looks to me like something she could use, as you're saying, Ray and Fred, at a later date. And here we are, that something like this becomes public where, she could say, well, see, I documented what happened at the meeting. And I said twice we were going by the book. It looks like somebody who's covering up something.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Building an alibi.
Well, who writes a memo on a meeting on January 5th?
To yourself.
You wait 15 days later to write the memo.
If I send an email to myself, it's like, make sure you go by Walmart on the way home. So I can remember it tomorrow, which is rare that I have to do that. But this whole thing, every day is something new, and it seems obvious what was going on here. In this case, Susan Rice is admitting that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, and James Comey, and her and others, high level, were talking about Russia and the Trump administration, Walker.
Yeah,
and they were even talking to the point about should we withhold information from the new team that's classified that hadn't been already on Hillary's server. I'm sorry. That was a little humor there that you may have missed. But go ahead, Walker.
I wouldn't be surprised if this email to herself was an attempt to – she wanted this to get out. Mm-hmm. You don't write a memo like this on a government email address that you don't want to become public through the congressional committee process, through them investigating. So she wrote this on January 20th before she leaves her office, before the inauguration. She writes this knowing it will come out at a later date.
Right.
And this is to cover. It's to cover for something in the past, I believe. But it's really amazing that we're finding out how, in months past, we've thought that there were a few bad apples in the FBI and DOJ that have been handling all this information and all these scandals. But it's turning out that President Obama was, it appears, frequently briefed on the Russia investigation.
Yes.
And the ongoing investigations of the Department of Justice. So that's a new piece of information, because in months past we've thought that he was clean of all of this scandal, but he's becoming more and more implicated as the days go on.
I think it was a strategy session.
Yeah.
Their last meeting together, mm-hmm. 15 days before Inauguration Day, their last meeting together to discuss what was already being cooked.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think this is the plan B, whatever you want to call it, that was referred to between Strzok and Lisa Page. Now we're going to destroy the credibility of the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our plan. I believe President Barack Obama knew about the dossier, that he knew that it was a Hillary Clinton campaign paid for political document that then went to the FISA court without the FISA court knowing
mm-hmm.
what the background of this dossier was.
Yeah, they withheld that.
They withheld that information. And forget about this nonsense about the footnote.
Yeah. Right.
That footnote said nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to find out that President Obama was a key player in the whole lead up to the Russia investigation. Mm-hmm. He may have not been calling the shots, but he was up to speed on everything going on.
Well, also the president, Obama, was communicating with Hillary Clinton. This is a separate issue. But he was communicating with Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, through an unsecured server, mm-hmm. Emails under a false name, mm-hmm. or what do you call that? Pseudonym? What do you call that?
Pseudonym.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, so we know that. But so I think a lot of this is President Obama had to help cover for Hillary Clinton on a lot of things, because if she were in trouble, it would necessarily make him in jeopardy. Because he was participating along with her in many of these things.
Well, the whole thing is the scenario you guys have laid out is completely believable, especially when you consider that up until Election Day, the Democrats never thought they were going to lose.
Right.
And if Hillary had won, how much of this would come out? Zero.
Zero.
It's all buried. And so after Election Day, suddenly they realize the cat's out of the bag and they are in real trouble. So the whole thing makes perfect sense. They did whatever they did because they truly believed there was no way Trump could win. And then when he won, suddenly the world turned upside down for them.
Is it any wonder why the Trump White House has been so suspicious about the Mueller investigation? Because Mueller, former James Comey boss. This is.
Oh, they're buds. They're Christmas cards. Sure.
They're good friends.
Right, yeah.
So is it any wonder why some of the advisors to President Trump recently have been saying, do not meet with Robert Mueller. Mm-hmm. Do not do it.
No, if you have to answer anything, answer it in writing with your lawyers.
Yes.
It's really shameful that the FBI, before the special counsel, sent agents to the West Wing to interview the National Security Advisor.
Right.
With unannounced, with no attorney present, and then later used that information to charge him with a felony with lying to the FBI. Yeah. That's unheard of.
It was a setup.
Yeah. It was a setup. Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Walker, what are we doing on our Facebook page?
Yes, we're live streaming. If you visit the Today's Issues Facebook page, we're live video streaming there, so you can watch the show, comment on the show, and find all the news articles linked there.
All right. By the way, anybody watching the Olympics, the Winter Olympics?
Fred? I watched last night.
What they have on last night?
This is the ladies' snowboard, and they call it, it's the snowboarders down through this semi-pipe. I don't know, obviously, but I'm just amazed when I see this was young ladies last night, and the American, I don't have her name in front of me.
She won the gold, didn't she?
She won the gold.
Right.
I mean, these kids.
How old was she now? Is she?
I think
17. It was a 17-year-old American man.
Yes, from Colorado that won the boys.
Yeah.
Now it was this young lady. I believe she's from California, and I'm just amazed at these kids. I mean, I just I'm sitting in my chair watching this lot, and I cringe how they do these things. They flip up in the air and go and roll over four or five times and then back down on this, and they're moving right along. It's amazing. But congratulations. These both American kids, male and female, have done just a terrific job.
Yeah.
Just a terrific job.
What about you, Ray? You watching any of this?
You know, you say to yourself, I'm not going to, right? Because I'm busy, a lot to do. I don't know, Tim, how it is with you, but if I sit down to start watching, it's just my eyes are glued. I mean, I start watching and cheering for these people I've never heard of. You know, alpine skiing, biathlon. My favorite is curling, shuffleboard on ice. I've watched it for hours. Fred, do you understand curling? You're from Canada. Can you explain curling?
Yeah, it's right up there with watching paint dry. Yes, I'm from Canada. You know, there's skill to it. I take it back, the curling fans.
Right. I got in trouble yesterday because I was made fun of curling, you know, talking about a broom on ice and
right.
And we had a couple of Facebook posters say, hey, these people are
it's
put a lot of their life into this, and you're making fun of it. So I retracted that that and recognize.
Right.
Well, the thing is, if you're an American, first of all, we never even think about it until the Olympics, right?
But curling?
Curling. We'll never think about it again until the next Winter Olympics, right?
Yeah.
It's not up there with the NBA or college football, so we didn't even think about it. And then you start watching it. I don't know about you guys, but the more I hear the commentators try to explain curling, the less sense it makes to me. So
it's shuffleboard. Just, it's shuffleboard on ice. If you played shuffleboard, you got a little bit of an idea of what curling is all about. And there is, I mean, the person throwing the rock, as they say. I mean, it's kind of mathematics. You'd have to know because you have to hit the other person's rock at a certain angle to bump that out so you get inside the circle. But that's
somewhere
we don't even know what to say.
Somewhere in the world, there's a 7-year-old right now, you know, out practicing this, what do you call it?
Curling.
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 Mm-hmm. You know, looking forward to the Olympics in 12 years where they can, you know, put their talents on display. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that has nothing to do with why Easter is celebrated when it is. Did you find out the answer to our question?
I did.
What is the answer, Brent?
According to the website I'm looking at, timeanddate.com, in 325, the Council of Nicaea established that Easter would be held on the first Sunday after the first full moon occurring on or after the vernal equinox. From that point forward, Easter's date depended on the ecclesiastical approximation of March the 21st for the vernal equinox.
Well, that clears it up, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah. You might as well have been talking Greek right there to me, Brent. But it has to do with the moon. First
full moon.
That's right.
First full moon after our uncle vernal equinox comes over to your house.
Correct.
That's right. Something like that.
All right. So
read
about it yourself,
folks.
People. You know, don't make us do all your homework for you.
We just want to be a blessing. That's all.
That's all.
All right, so we do know why Easter's celebrated, right, Fred?
That's right.
That's the most important thing.
That's right. That's right.
That's the most important thing. Anyway, we're going to take a short time out for, we're going to take a break right here. What we're going to do, and we're going to come back in 2 or 3 minutes with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. We'll see you back here then.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
The Bible tells us that our fathers discipline us because of love. Love will cause me to get my hiney spanked by my father because of love. Gently warning somebody is a demonstration of love.
We'll also hear news headlines and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We still have seats available for our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, that's one tour. And then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, that is a separate tour. Now, we put them back to back so you can do both. If you're flying in from Texas or Montana or California or wherever you may be coming from, so that you can do those tours back-to-back with us if that's something you so choose to do. Now, Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be with us all along the way as our historian. Stephen will add context, he'll answer questions, talk about the people, the places, the events that make up our early American history. So for more information on this Spiritual Heritage Tour, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com for the September tour information.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. A North Carolina family is grieving after the unthinkable happened. Their three-year-old boy is dead, his mother injured, along with two paramedics. Police say a drunk driver slammed into an ambulance taking the child to a hospital in Winston-Salem. The suspect, Jose Romero, age 27. Police say he was driving without a license, and they also believe the man is an illegal alien. According to court documents, the driver blew more than twice the legal limit on the breathalyzer 2 hours after the accident. Federal agents have placed an immigration hold on Romero, so it's unlikely he will hurt any more citizens. That's of little comfort to the family of the dead three-year-old. He is not the first American killed on American soil by an illegal, and he will not be the last until Congress gets serious about securing our borders, until Congress believes that American dreams matter too. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this program on American Family Radio. Walker, you said we're not only on Facebook, we're threatening to take over the YouTube world, are we?
We have entered the YouTube world.
Oh, we've entered it.
Yes.
So we're not a threat yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Maybe one day.
Okay.
But you got to enter first, and then you can become
right.
a threat.
Right.
So we have entered the Today's Issues has entered the YouTube sphere. So if you want to watch the show, you not only have the Facebook option, mm-hmm. but maybe if you're not on Facebook, you can just go to YouTube. And if you do such, go to YouTube and type in Today's Issues Live.
Okay.
You can watch the show live and also, of course, watch it later if you're not able to watch the whole show. So go
How
to
How much does that cost us?
It's free.
Now, don't if we get a lot of viewers, don't they pay us?
Yeah, I think we're a little ways out from that.
Are we?
Yeah.
We started. Do we have one?
Yeah, and it's because I'm watching it.
Okay, you got one. Well, that's a start.
That's a beginning. We got to
start
somewhere.
Hey, trip of 1,000 miles starts with one step. Walker.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we got to have one person. So you're one person. You're our new person. So this is brand new to us, though, right?
Yes, we've only been doing it for one. This is our second day to do it, so we'll gain some viewers as the days go on.
Okay.
So Today's Issues live on YouTube, also in addition to Facebook.
You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Tim here with Walker and Fred and Ray. Ray's in Dallas. So the rest of us here in the media metropolis of Tupelo, broadcasting to the world. And Brent Creeley's running the control boards for us, and he's our crack investigator over here on why we have Easter celebrated different times of the year, somewhere in March or April. But he's our would you call yourself a crack investigator, Brent?
I serve at whatever
position you need me to serve.
You're not on crack.
No, not on crack.
Okay. But you're a crack investigator.
Correct.
Which means you're Johnny on the spot.
That's right. So
all right, thank you.
I like that.
All right.
Brent's getting the most airtime all year.
That's right.
So, Fred, what is Johnny on the spot? Where does that come from, do you think?
Johnny on the
that
spot.
Expression. Do you know?
I have seen that on little houses at construction sites.
Johnny on the spot. I wonder if it's Johnny Reb. I wonder if it goes back to the Civil War. Just wondering out loud here. Look up Johnny on the spot, if we Brent, and come back and report to us in a few minutes. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Sandy Rios is heard each morning at 7:05 Central Time on American Family Radio with her program Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. She also serves as Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, and she joins us most Tuesdays that she's available. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim.
Good to have you with us today. Boy, we were talking about what you were talking about this morning on your program, this ever-developing story about abuse of power, really is what it amounts to, with respect to the people in the Obama administration against President Trump and his team. Do you see this, Sandy? I've said before, and I don't mean to be discouraging to people, but there really is the some truth to the fact that sometimes people are too powerful to ever really fully hold accountable, and we'll see whether these major players. I'm talking about James Comey, for example, Hillary Clinton, for example, Sidney Blumenthal, Susan Rice, others. Do you think till a year from now this will be all over with in terms of and nobody will have to pay any penalty?
You know what, Tim? I don't think it'll be over in a year.
Okay.
Because I think one reason is because the left will continue to try to bring a counter narrative and to discredit all that so many of us are following. You know, keep in mind that a ton of people don't know half, don't know a quarter, a tenth of what we know, because we talk about this almost every day. They're hearing different things. They're hearing that Devin Nunes is he's cooperating with the Russians, that memo that he released last week was a dud. There was nothing in it. That's what they're hearing. And so as long as the left, with the cooperation of the media, can continue to sort of drown out what I believe is the truth on this on these issues, it'll go on and on. And as long as it's useful to them to discredit Donald Trump, any kind of disruption that interrupts the work of this president because they don't like what he wants to do, they're going to do. So that's why I don't think it'll be over in a year.
Okay. Over in terms of, you're talking about in terms of the media and the Democrats coming after President Trump and his administration on charges of colluding with the Russians and that kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about will keep going on?
Well, it's of course, they're moving now to obstruction of justice. You know what, Tim? Only God himself knows, where this might end. But I think that it's going to come to some sort of a finale and conclusion, I think is probably not is too much too high to hope for.
Okay,
because we have weak leadership. We have the people pushing back, who have actually the power to do something, are weak as they can be.
Yeah,
from Paul Ryan to Mitch McConnell, and Devin Nunes is a Superman from my perspective, but he's one man.
Yeah,
the House Freedom Caucus, they're speaking the truth, but they're just 30, 30 so men.
My wife, Allison, she is a cynic when it comes to the powerful people being held accountable for their actions. And I'm talking about go to jail or, pay fines or be charged with something or be indicted. And I remember when I told her about 2 years ago, I said, hey, Hillary, I don't know when it was. I said, Hillary Clinton, she's busted. I said, she had a server in her house that was hidden from oversight that she was doing State Department business on, potentially even sending classified information on it. We learned now that she was. I said, she's done. She's toast. Well, I said, no, she isn't. She will get by with this like they do always, and nothing will ever happen to her. So,
Tim,
and she was right. Go ahead.
I was in the gym in Chicago. I remember the, you know, like the days you remember when news comes, and it was January of whatever year, maybe 98, and I heard the report over the air that Bill Clinton, the news broke about Monica Lewinsky.
Right.
And I remember, so first of all, being shocked because she was such a young intern and how disgraceful it was. But the second thing I thought, I mean, I thought, he's toast. There's no way.
Right.
And now, you know, of course, now, I don't know if it's true today, but it's been true recently that Bill Clinton is the most popular Democratic leader in the country. So, you know, he did get end up being impeached, but he wasn't removed from office by the Senate. So I think that we're living in a day and age where people who are perpetrating a lot of evil have no shame. Normal people would be ashamed and they'd want to step down or make restitution or apologize, but that's not what we're dealing with.
Well, the way of the world has always been, I mean, you know, powerful people who know powerful people who know powerful people, and a lot of them are all friends and they protect each other. When it comes to the progressives made up in the Democratic Party, and don't get me wrong, Republicans are certainly capable of trying to avoid justice as well, but I'm just saying with secular progressives, they have no shame. And if you take away shame or guilt, you think you're on a righteous mission to save the world from President Trump and and the Republicans. You know, it's the ends justifies the means, and that and if it means hiding things or getting away with it, you know, this Susan Rice. Remember back to Benghazi, we were talking about Susan Rice. They and President Obama, they knew that the video was not the reason we were attacked in Benghazi, but they went with it anyway, knowing full well that it was not true. See what I'm saying? But they knew that the end justifies the means. And that's the thinking of the secular progressive movement, because if you have no fear of God, if you don't believe in the Ten Commandments, for example, you there's no punishment or reward for being truthful and honest in front of somebody higher than your boss or yourself, then you're going to go with whatever works, you know, to keep yourself in power or to, in the case of Hillary Clinton, to escape escape justice. So. Anyway, Sandy, what are you going to be discussing tomorrow on your program? Do you know yet?
Tomorrow I'm going to be focusing, besides whatever the headlines are tonight, I'll be discussing what's happening in colleges and universities in regard to propaganda. I've got Dr. Peter Wood on with me, who is with National Association of Scholars, is the name of the organization. They are fabulous, by the way. And Peter came out of, I don't know if it's Harvard, Dartmouth, Princeton, one of those, was a professor there and was just disgusted by what he saw. And he has formed this organization of really conservative, there are like five of them, no, I'm kidding, but of conservative scholars. And they do great work, and they've been investigating this, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow.
Okay. Hey, Sandy, thanks for being on with us. Take care. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Sandy Rios. What do you think about what she was talking about there, Fred?
Yeah, one can get very, I guess, cynical when you review. I mean, I, as you were talking with Sandy there, I was going back to Bill Clinton. I mean, this Me Too movement, stop and think for a moment. Some of the people, the women who were attacked by Bill Clinton, this is going back to his days when he was Attorney General in Arkansas, then governor in Arkansas. I mean, you got Jennifer Flowers, you've got what, Juanita Broderick, those women, Broderick in particular, who tells the story of being raped in a hotel room. Bill Clinton walks away. You know, he gets away with all of this stuff. And the hypocrisy of the Democrats and this Me Too movement, and then Bill Clinton, he's like, you can't touch him because he's Bill Clinton.
Right. Yeah, well, that was back... I would say this, one caveat on what you're saying is, I wonder, I don't know that President Clinton could get away today politically with what he did in the 80s with all those accusations about rape and mistreatment of women and affairs.
But in the last 2 years, Broderick again, remember Trump brought these women forward?
Yeah.
In the last 2 years, again, their story is told. And Broderick's story is horrible.
Right.
But Ray, the point I think Fred's making, in the Democratic Party and the liberal establishment on the national media have not distanced themselves from Bill Clinton in the way that, for example, others have been, like Harvey Weinstein and others.
You know, Tim, you make an interesting point about the changing circumstances, the 90s versus the 21st century. Back then, Bill and Hillary could do what he did, and they could go to bed at night. They could put their head on the pillow knowing that the mainstream media would back them up, cover up, obfuscate, change the subject, and all the rest. And back then, the conservative media was beginning to rise, but it's nothing like it is today. So they had the certainty that they were going to be covered up. It's an interesting question. We'll never know, obviously, Tim, but we are living in a different world of social media, of people with cell phones. Would Bill Clinton be able, would he be able to get away with it today like he did 20 years ago? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson, and Dr. Ray Pritchard. We appreciate you listening to our program. What's the next topic, Fred?
Well, going on in Congress right now, the Senate in particular has turned its attention to a debate, which began with a vote last night on immigration, because we are coming up on March 5. Why is that date important? That date is important because that's when President Trump's extension of DACA comes to an end. And he is indicating that he has no intention of extending things beyond March 5, DACA being the program that was initiated by President Obama to give some relief to those young people who cross the border illegally with their moms and dads and are still living in this country. DACA gave them some protection, but that was an executive order. It's coming to an end on March 5. We know now that President Trump has come up with an immigration reform plan. In that plan, he's willing to give a pathway to citizenship for 1.8 DACA/Dreamers. DACA is kind of a subset of the Dreamers.
1.8 million.
1.8 million.
Which would be the actual people.
Yes.
And their immediate families.
That's right. So he's saying, I'll give them a pathway to citizenship. They won't be deported. But he says, I'm only going to do that if you give me approximately $25 billion to help build the wall on the southern border. I'm also going to get rid of the lottery visas, the visa lotteries, and also chain migration, which basically says I let young Marty in, and Marty gets to bring all his relatives from whatever country he's coming from.
Yeah, stop that.
Stop that. All right. The Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader for the Democrats, basically has said, the only thing we'll agree to is what he calls a narrow bill, which basically is the Dreamers. That's all. They're not interested in all the other conditions. President Trump this morning tweeting out, this is it. He says he wants to protect the Dreamers, but he is not going to extend that beyond March 5. He's not going to extend that unless he gets these other matters. Now, the problem is the numbers in the Senate. We were having our meeting this morning. They're probably, it's a filibuster. It's got to be 60 senators that agree to a bill that says Dreamers get protected and these other three caveats that have been put in there. And Chuck Schumer is saying no, and there's a lot of Republicans that are saying no also. We won't go along with that. For instance, I believe it's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
Won't go along with what?
He's talking about we'll give you $2 billion for the wall. Now, they all like the protection for the 1.8, with some exceptions, because some believe it's amnesty for people.
How much is the president asking for?
$25
billion. $25 billion, yeah.
And Lindsey Graham is saying two?
Two.
Okay. Yeah. Huh. I don't know why Lindsey Graham.
Well, here's the important thing to note. The money is not an issue, obviously. Our government prints money like nobody's business. Last week, the federal government, Congress, sent $10 billion to insurance companies as a bailout, to bail out insurance companies regarding Obamacare. That's $10 billion. That was just in one bill. They sent $90 billion in hurricane relief to Florida, Texas, and I believe
Puerto Rico.
So money is not an issue,
right,
for our government. They print it incessantly. So it then boils down to the senators must not want a wall, because it's not that they don't have the money for it. It must be that they don't want it. So $2 billion is an insult to people who want the wall.
I tell you what, though, if I'm a dreamer, I'm telling the Democrats, you take this deal
right
tomorrow, right? Don't
right.
you think?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, from the point of view of those 1.8 million, they're saying make a deal. So the question is, what's going to happen? Is Trump going to give in, or will there be a, if there's no deal by March 5th, what happens?
Well, I don't know. No, President Trump's not going to back down on this one.
No,
he's not. He if he does, his credibility is lost with his base. He can't back down on this one. Mm-hmm. And personally, I'm wondering what I've just mentioned about if I'm a dreamer, I'm saying do a deal. Sure. Do a right. deal. Again, put yourself in the place. And we've had people call this program. I know we had a gentleman the other day called Brian's program, Focal Point, and he was a dreamer. He was a person who was brought here as a child. This is the only country he's ever known. And he wants to become a citizen, okay? If you're that person, and I'm hearing that President Trump is saying he's going to provide me with a pathway to citizenship, which is what I've always wanted, for not only me, but for my wife and or my husband and my children, then I'm saying, what's stopping the Democrats from doing a deal that helps me become a American citizen? And the Democrats say to him, yeah, but we don't want a wall. I'm saying, I'm living in Lexington, Kentucky, or
right,
Columbus,
right.
Ohio, right, right. And I'm minding my own business.
Make a deal.
Trying to make a life for my family. And you're telling me you're blocking citizenship for my family because you're against building a wall? Hmm. For what reason are you against building a wall to protect our country? So I'm just saying, these dreamers are figuring out that the Democrats are using them as pawns.
That's right.
That's right.
In a bigger picture, don't you think, Ray?
Well, absolutely. If the Democrats really cared about the dreamers, they would make a deal. But they don't want to be seen as giving in to the president. I just hope, Tim, what you said is true. I hope President Trump just digs in his heels and says, no wall, no deal. And find out who blinks first.
Right.
Because this is, the dreamers are for this, as they should be.
Yeah.
A path to citizenship, one way or the other, fine. I guess almost 100% of them would say, go ahead and build the wall.
Sure. Build a wall wasn't making any difference to me. I'm living in America anyway.
That's right. I'm already here.
Build a wall. Building a wall is not invading a country or killing people. It's just putting up a security wall to protect your country, and also a border wall, as I mentioned before, like the president wants to build, is preventative, and is a deterrent. If you have a problem with mass illegal immigration into your country, like we do here in America, if you build a physical barrier, a wall, and that's just one aspect of border security. You have drones. You have, electric. You have other ways. You have other ways to cameras. You have other ways to deal with this issue. But there are places that need a physical barrier, and we've already seen some of the prototypes that have been built, which is going to be If word gets back to people who are thinking about coming to America illegally, people tell them, well, you can go try if you want to, but you just need to be prepared when you get there, and you've paid $1,000 to some coyote.
Right.
That you're going to have like a 25-foot wall. If you're prepared to go over that, then go for it. You see what I'm saying? And then they say to themselves, you know, it's just not worth it because I'm going to get there and there's a wall. And I'm not – so now people – yes, people will figure some way around that, but it'll be far, far less people than would come had you not had a barrier there. So I do not – except for what we've mentioned before, and that is the Democrat Party wants America to continue to be flooded with illegals because they want them to one day become voters in the Democrat Party because they come from socialist nations, mm-hmm. and they're poor, uneducated people for the most part. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make them less human. God loves those people, and they should be treated with dignity. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying, let's face it, they're coming here to America for a reason. Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're poor and they're uneducated, and they're coming here in desperation.
Yeah, I think what we need to look out for, I think what the American people need to look out for is a deal done with mostly Democrat votes. Because I believe that...
A deal with who?
A deal with mostly Democrats cutting a deal with some establishment Republicans, like they do with the budget, etc., where they leave out, they don't need the conservative part of their party for votes. So all the Democrats, and then you add some Republicans cutting a deal, which would include minor wall funding, if any at all.
Nope, not going to happen. President Trump's presidency's over if he does that.
Yo, well, I agree. I'm just saying.
He'll veto that every day.
Walker, can he get can Schumer get 11 Republican senators to join with him?
I think he can. I think he can. I think the votes are there for Chuck Schumer to become the majority leader, metaphorically, and run and push legislation through the Senate. I think it will pass the Senate, but I'm afraid I don't want President Trump to think he's so desperate that he accepts a bad deal. I don't think he will sign a bill that has no wall funding, but I think he's willing to budge on his $25 billion. Unfortunately, and
well,
I could just see.
I don't know how much it cost. Who knows? I'm sure there's some kind of estimation. He's asked for 25. He probably would settle for 15 or something
sure.
like that.
Yeah. Probably.
Get it started.
$2 billion is nothing, right? I mean, it's 10% of what he, less than 10% of what he asked for. So that's a non-starter.
I think the question's going to be, let's say they give him $15 billion, but what's he going to do about the visa lottery? What's he going to do about chain migration?
End it.
Will he stand hard on that?
Yes, he will. I personally think he will. I think if there's one issue that President Trump was known for as a candidate that separated him from all the other Republican candidates, it was dealing with illegal immigration into America, mm-hmm. in every respect, family chain migration, the visa lottery, border security, including a wall. I would say E-Verify. Too, although I haven't seen that mentioned in anything. So, restoring law and order to our immigration process, that's why the president was elected by a lot of people. That was the first thing on their agenda. So if he caves on that, he's toast. Now, he'll still be the president, but I'm talking about, and he's probably not toast, maybe that's an overreaction, but his credibility with his base is severely damaged,
yes.
which could cause a lack of enthusiasm in the fall, for example. And really, really hinder him going forward. Ray, you agree with that analysis?
Well, I think, what kind of deal would he take? He would take a solution for the Dreamers. And I'm just thinking out loud here. Would he take a deal in March that said, let's solve the Dreamer problem, let's fund the wall, and put off the other parts of the immigration stuff, the chain lottery and the other thing, for later.
Chain migration and visa lottery, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, maybe push that off later. He's pretty good at those kind of deals.
Yeah.
Boy, I think if he gave up on those last two, though, you're still left with a huge problem.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to ask yourself, the visa lottery thing, I've never understood anyway. Why don't you have people come here by merit? You know what I'm saying? Because they have skills that we need. Mm-hmm. That's always traditionally been the reasons people are allowed to become citizens of any country.
Yeah.
We stopped doing that. So we'll see what happens, but I do think President Trump's credibility with his base is
it's at risk, right?
It's at risk.
It's at risk.
It's contingent on how he handles the next couple of weeks with the Democrats in particular. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.